This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
I'm at Jodrell Bank on a beautiful sunny day, and with me is Brian Woosnam, who is a Membership Secretary and Events Officer of the Llandrillo College and Coastal Astronomy Society. Thank you very much for coming to Jodrell Bank.
Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me.
So you're not actually a professional astronomy, but you love observing the sky anyway. So what got you started on that?
Okay, I first started interested in astronomy in 1969 with watching the Apollo moon landings on the TV. And then about 4 years later, I used to look at the stars and think, I wonder if it's possible to photograph the night sky. So then I first started using old SLR cameras and ordinary film and doing long time exposures of the night sky, of constellations and things like that.
So what about the night sky is it that you are particularly keen on? What is it that fascinates you?
Okay, my main fascination is deep sky observing and seeing all these various nebulas, the measure objects, there's 110 of them, globular clusters and admission nebulas and things like that. But unfortunately, because of light pollution where I live currently, I now do more with the planets and solar observing.
So have you made many pictures?
I've got over 3,000 pictures on a website of mine, and I've got lots and lots of photographs at home on CDs and hard drives and things like that. And what people say, why do you keep them for so long? But what it is, you improve all the time. New equipment comes out, you find new techniques. So it's a learning curve. And when I actually do lectures, I actually show the pictures that have gone wrong as well as the ones that have gone right, so that you can show people where mistakes can be made.
So do you have any specific pictures that are your favourite?
Yes, I think one of my favourite ones got to be the solar eclipse in Turkey in March 2006, because it's not very often you see a total eclipse of the sun. And it was very interesting because we had clear skies all the way through the solar eclipse. I've looked for solar eclipses in the UK, and you always seem to get clouded out.
So do you often travel to make pictures for astronomy?
Yes, what we do in our astronomy club, we've got close links with the Liverpool Astronomy Society, and we go up by Lake Brynig where it's a really dark sky, and we usually go up there to do imaging from there.
So what kind of work do you do for the Coastal Astronomy Society?
It's all voluntary work. I first started on the committee in 2001, and before long I took over as membership secretary. I did membership secretary for a couple of years, then actually had a go at being chairman for a year. And then I went back down to be membership again, secretary again, because you can only do chairman for 1 year. And I do the membership secretary's job, and I do all the events, arranging events at the college, big lecture room. We have an event every month, and we get guest speakers to come along.
Do you have any events planned for the coming year, as it is a International Year of Astronomy?
Yes, we've got lots of interesting events for the International Year of Astronomy. On the 22nd of April, there's a lecture at the Llandrillo College lecture room by the public library, and I'm actually doing a talk about solar observing, how to observe the sun through a personal solar telescope, and also solar eclipses, various types of ways of observing the sun, projection and things like that. And then we've got another lecture on the 20th of May, which is Steve Reed from our astronomy club. He has his own observatory, and in the last 12 months he's got more into deep sky observing using triple colour astronomy, using different coloured filters. That's a new technique that's come out. Then on the 24th of June, we've got a really good, interesting lecture from a gentleman called Rob Johnson from Liverpool Astronomy Society. He's been doing astrophotography for years with old 35mm cameras, and he's actually coming to talk on the modern way of doing astrophotography and imaging using webcams and the modern digital SLR cameras. After that, we've got our star party, which is on Saturday, the 13th of September, and that's held on a local farmer's land, which is away from all light pollution. He's actually a member of our society, and he's allowing us to use his land for 2 days. Then on the 20th of September, we've got another open day up at Lake Brynig, which is open all day to the general public, and there's going to be solar scopes set up, and in the evening we'll be allowing people to look at the moon. There's another event that's pending. The date's not finalised yet. And that is taking a 16-inch dob to the summit of Snowdon and holding a star party up there. We're just waiting for clarification on the date from the Llanberis Mountain Rescue Team. And what they're allowing us to do is to use the cafe overnight as a base. And we can do lectures in there at night, and we can actually sleep there overnight and come down the following day.
So you're going to take the equipment to the top of Snowdon?
Yes, the big Dobsonian telescope will go down in the chairman's Ford Transit van to Llanberis, and then it will be put into one of the coaches of the train, and then it will be shunted up to the top of Snowdon.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. We didn't know whether we'd be able to get this event off the ground, but they're really, really keen. It's just a matter of finalising the date. So that's a really good opportunity for people to come along and view from the summit of Snowdon, the highest peak in Wales. Then we go into October, and there's a gentleman coming on the Wednesday the 21st of October. He's coming to do a lecture about time. A gentleman called Paul Braid from our astronomy club is going to talk about time, which is quite a big subject. We haven't really got any major events after that, but we do have the Tuesday night, the second Tuesday every month, we meet in Llanelian near Colwyn Bay, and it's our observation night, and that's a great opportunity for people that are just starting off, because it's hands-on. You come along, you pay a pound to come in, and we have, and if it's a clear sky, we have telescopes set up outside, and people can look through telescopes, look through binoculars. If they're not sure what type of telescope to buy, they can ask us for advice, have a look through a telescope, and then make the decision whether astronomy is for them or not.
Anybody can participate in these events?
Yeah, anyone can come along. Yeah, there's no charge. It's all free. It's all the part of the International Year of Astronomy.
Do you have a website where people can read about this?
Yes. The easiest way to find the website, it's with the Federation of Astronomical Societies Northwest Group. Rather than give people the long name, what we do is you go into the internet and do a search engine and just type in NWGAS, and we always say to people, North Wales Gas. And if you type that in, it comes up with the North Wales Group of Astronomical Societies, and then it shows you a map of all the local astronomy societies in the area. And if you just click on the Clanrithlow one, it takes you straight into what's happening.
So for this occasion, we will put a link on our website as well.
Okay, thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
So how old is this society?
The society started in April 2001, so we've now been going for 8 years. It first started because we had a gentleman working at the college who was an astronomer as well, and he had an observatory and everything, and he was a lecturer on the GCSE astronomy course at the college. And the first and second year students got together and they wanted to form a society. So this gentleman, Dave Jackson, came to see me and he said, I know you're into astronomy, you've been doing it for years. Would you like to come and help me to get the committee off the ground? So he was the chairman the first year and we got it off the ground. And into the second year, we had 86 members. You do get people that come along and then they find it's not what they thought it was going to be and they leave. But we have a constant 43 members now. Whether we'll get more this year with the International Year of Astronomy, I don't know. But the good thing is, with our Astronomy Society, children can join under the age of 16, and we only charge them a pound for membership for a whole year, so that's quite a good price, really.
So you're a very active society, but I understand you also write a monthly astronomy section for a local newspaper. So what do you typically write about?
What I basically do is I tell people everything, what's happening in the month ahead coming along. So what I do is I tell them the general things about what constellations to look for, the phases of the moon and things like that, all the events that are happening in our local astronomy society. But then if last month we had a comet that came over, so I notify people about meteor showers, look out for the comet, where's the best place to go and see it, and things like that. Okay. So it's really, really interesting.
I understand you're also quite keen on reading books about astronomy. Do you have many books?
Yes, I've got 143 in total. I've now told people on my birthday and for Christmas, don't buy me any more astronomy books, because, unless it's something that's new, it's come out. But I've got 143 astronomy books. I first started reading astronomy books when I was 10 years old. My parents used to say to me, what do you want for Christmas? Would you like a Blue Peter annual or something like that? And I say, no, I want a book by Sir Patrick Moore. So I've actually got 43 astronomy books by Sir Patrick Moore. I've got a big collection there, and I've also got lots of DVDs on astronomy as well, because they're handy to use for events. But these books I've read over the years, and then I go back and read them again, because it's interesting how things change.
Is there any specific book you would like to advise to the listeners to read?
There's quite a few good ones out. One of the best ones I've ever read is the autobiography by Sir Patrick Moore called 80 Not Out. And that basically tells you all about Sir Patrick Moore when he first started in astronomy, what type of telescopes he used and all the trips he's been on, solar eclipses and things that have occurred over the years. That's a really good book. Another book that I found very interesting was a book called Moon Dust. And that's a book about all the astronauts, Apollo astronauts went to the moon and how their lives have changed from when before they went to the moon and afterwards. But for people who want to start off in astronomy, you usually find that the Phillips range of books are really, really good, because they'll tell you the basics, how to observe the night sky, how to work out light, how far they are in light distances, and things like that. Because what people tend to do these days is they rush out and buy a telescope. But when I first started in astronomy, you had to be able to what they call star hop. So you had to physically work out to recognize the constellations. So you'd start off with a pair of binoculars, go out each night and get to know a certain constellation and learn it that way. But these days people buy these automatic telescopes that you just polar align and do a two-star alignment, and then it just finds things for you, which is, it's not really, to me, it's not really astronomy, because you should be able to work it out scientifically, really. It's sort of cheating when you use those, but I suppose it's just the modern way of doing things. Because you can buy, I also say to people, they come to the astronomy club and they'll say, what type of telescope shall I buy? Now, they might pay £800 for a telescope that's really, really small aperture, 4-inch, but because it's got the computer system on, they're not getting the aperture, so that telescope isn't going to show them as much as you, for that money, you could buy a really big 8-inch reflector and you'd see more detail in the structure of these deep sky objects. So it's just, it's better to learn rather than rush into it, to get yourself into, to familiarize yourself with the night sky. Another good book that I've read is Observing the Night Sky with Binoculars by Sir Patrick Moore. That's a really good book. That's starting from basics. So if people want to get into astronomy, I recommend they do that. They're very fortunate these days because there's a lot of computerized software that will navigate the night sky for you. But one of the best things to purchase is a thing called a planisphere. And what that is, it's a rotating disc. And you can set it up for any day of the year, and it'll navigate the night sky for you, and you can work out exactly where all the constellations are. But if you look on the back of it, it tells you the position of planets, and you can work out where the planets are amongst the constellations. And I think that's really important, that people should do it that way to identify things.
That's some great advice. So obviously you've spent a whole lot of time in your life on astronomy. Do you have any future plans?
Yes. I've just built myself a nice little solar observatory. It's only, it might sound a bit strange to people, but it's a 6x4 shed that I bought from B&Q a couple of years ago. And I used to keep my mountain bike in there, but I've got that somewhere else. And last year, I took up solar observing a Hydrogen Alpha telescope. It was my 50th birthday, so people chipped in and bought me this telescope because I've always wanted one. And what I found last year, it's totally different to observing at night. Now, the good thing about observing during the day, you don't have to worry about light pollution. You don't have to worry about staying up late. Now then, where the downside comes down, at night you're observing, it's cold, you've got to wrap up. It's the opposite during the day. And if you're not careful, I actually did get sunburnt last year. I was observing, I got carried away observing, and I got sunburnt at the back of my neck, so it's important that you cover yourself up. But one of the things I didn't realise at the time was, I use a laptop computer, and I capture images using a 2-cam camera, which is like a webcam, and you catch hundreds of frames and build up a picture. And what happens is, you've got your laptop outside and the sun is so bright, it's hitting the screen, you can't see the screen very well, so it's hard for you to focus on the prominences coming off the edge of the sun or the structure within the sun. And what you tend to do is you might turn the brightness up on the actual camera, and then when you go in to process your images, they're overexposed. So last year what I did was, I made a little box which the laptop goes into, and then it shelters the sun off it. But what I've done this year to make it more convenient for myself is, if I wait to midday, it's ideal for me to get the sun over the top of the houses where I live, and I can follow it later on in the year. It obviously, the sun goes to a higher altitude. So between May and September, I can even get it when I come home from work in the evening time, spend an hour or so catching some images. So what I've done is, I've made this 6x4 shed, and I've attached dark material on the inside to make it completely blacked out. Drilled a small hole where the door goes through so the USB cable can go through, and built a little shelf so my laptop can go inside there. I can put my solar telescope tracking on the sun, shut the door, and then I can just go in and work in the dark. So I'm looking forward to using that. And then my next thing I want to do is have an observatory. Now, Diane and I haven't got a place of our own yet, but we're hoping to get a place in the next couple of years. And I was thinking about building an observatory with a dome. But I've been thinking about it because I've heard that quite a few people have been unfortunate where if you've got a dome in your garden and people can see it, it can attract the wrong type of people.
What kind of people?
Dishonest people, really, where they'll think, oh, that there's a dome in that garden, there must be something worth pinching in there, or, you know, curiosity or whatever. So it's just the small majority of people that would do that, but I have known people that have had break-ins, telescopes have been stolen. So I've come up with the idea, after going to Sir Patrick Moore's house, of having a runoff shed observatory, because if you've got the shed in the garden, it just looks like an ordinary shed, and then you just roll the roof back, and then the night sky is visible to your telescope. So I've got a nice telescope in the house that I haven't used for a while. It's a big 10-inch reflector, f4 focal ratio, which means it's really good for deep sky work. And I've got a nice mount there as well, which I bought secondhand off somebody for the future. Once I get the observatory built, I will have a central pillar in the middle of the observatory, have the head of the mount on the top, and then this big 10-inch scope will go on top. That's what I'm looking forward to. I keep saying I'm going to do it. I was going to do it by the time I'm 50, but I haven't quite managed that, so I've got the solar observatory instead.
Well, I wish you all the best of luck with accomplishing that. And it's been wonderful talking to somebody who's so keen on astronomy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Cheers.